Te reo ererangi o te mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
Assalamu alaikum, kia ora, and welcome to In Transit, the series where we centre the many journeys of immigrant ethnic women navigating life in Aotearoa, New Zealand, with me, your host, Hafsa. In each episode, I sit down with women who share their journeys of settling in a new land, the challenges they have faced, and the resilience that carried them through. From cultural clashes to quiet triumphs, and from moments of doubt to deep appreciation. These are raw, honest, and hopeful conversations. Whether you're new to the country or simply curious, this is your space to listen, learn, and connect. Kia ora and welcome to another episode of our podcast. And I'd like now to hand over to our guest to introduce herself.
Hi, kia ora, Hafsa. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. My name is Anshu and I am from Punjab, India. I've been in New Zealand since 2007, so almost 18 years, going to be 18 years in July. And I have a family, my husband and three young girls. So yeah, that's me, Anshu. Yeah.
Very nice to know. Do you know, Anshu, that this is going to be 18 years for me as well? I came in June 2007.
Oh, really?
So tell me about the first day in New Zealand. How was it and what do you remember about it?
First day in New Zealand, that seems like so long ago now, but I think I can very clearly remember. So I have family around here. So when we came, I already had some family here. And my eldest cousin came to pick us up from the airport. And we came in July, so it was a bit cold here. It was winter, so it was like super cold. And, you know, we were carrying our jackets and stuff. I think we had packed our life in four bags, I would say. I had two little kids with me, 3-year-old and a 4-year-old at that time. And it was like we were super excited, but at the same time, we were very anxious because we didn't know what was going to happen. How are we going to settle here? How are we going to find work? How are we going to run the family as well as look after the kids? You know, there was lots of questions in mind, but at the same time, really happy to see how beautiful the country was when we landed here. Like everything looked so pretty. The mountains, like you can see mountains from anywhere, like you know, around the, you know, airport. So yeah. It was amazing. It was good and bad at the same time, like because we were missing family already.
Yeah, so you came in peak winter then in July.
Yes.
Yeah, how?
Yeah.
And I know Punjab does have a few cold days in the north. So was it pretty similar or was the winter here felt different?
No. Winter here is like it goes to your bones. It's not the same as back home. Not at all. Definitely not the first year because it takes like some time to acclimatize to the weather conditions. I remember the first home we had because we were very new and the kind of home we could afford at that time was not like super heated. It didn't have a lot of sunlight and I would like get swollen fingers with chill, like those chill balloons. I would get them and it was nasty first winter. But then slowly, I think we learned and the body learned, I would say, and it was fine. Now it's fine. Now going back to India in hot weather is a mission. Like I can't deal with the heat anymore.
Yeah, and I guess there's more humidity in India, I think.
Not in Punjab.
No,
It
all right.
depends when you go. If you go in the rainy season, yes, it's humidity. But otherwise, it's like the scorching heat.
Yeah, oh, good. So I guess my next question is around, you know, you said you already had family here. How did that help you in settling in when you came here? I know you said you were excited, but you were also anxious. So having that family, how did that support?
I think we I would say I was lucky to have my cousins here. They really supported in settling in. Like for the first month, I actually lived at my brother's house by the time we, found our own accommodation and slowly found the jobs and decided to what to do. And we applied all our papers when we came here. And we took his help, used the immigration lawyers. But yeah, him being there, his family being there, was super helpful. And they guided us, they supported us. So I think, as I say, we were lucky to have somebody here. And through him, we actually started knowing more people. And that's how, our connections were built to start with. So yeah, we had a support.
And that support, obviously, I think would mean a lot when you come to a new country. And you've said, and I've written that down as, you packed your life in four bags.
Yeah.
So let's go back to what was happening before you came to New Zealand, because you said packed your life in four bags. And what was the motivation to move to New Zealand at that time?
Yeah. So when before coming here, I used to work as a relationship manager in a bank. I used to work with Kotak Mahindra Bank. My husband owned a petrol pump. And like he was doing his business, I was doing my job, and we were okay. And had two little kids, but then we were looking for a better life, a change. He could not see progression for him, and we thought, okay, let's think of moving out of the country and explore. So when I came, actually, I didn't even hand in the resignation at my job because we hadn't. We applied for a residency after we came here, which is different from many people what they do now. Because I knew I had family here and we had talked to him how he could support us with the applications. So that's why I said we didn't know what was going to happen. Will that progress or not progress? Will we have to go back? But him being here and helping us with all the immigration stuff helped us settle. So it was just looking for a change, better life for the kids, that we decided to move and take the challenge, I think.
Yeah, you did take the challenge, aren't you, in terms of, packing up with two little kids. It is,
Yes.
how were the kids? How did they take the whole shift?
My eldest one was very attached to the grandparents, and she still is. Moving for her was very difficult. She cried for days missing her grandma. She wouldn't, like, at those times when we moved, like 17 years ago, you would know that there was no cameras on the laptops. You had to buy a camera to put on top and, maybe arrange a time to Skype or something, or like get calling cards. So she would find it very difficult. I remember first time we actually bought a camera off that shop called Dick & Smith at that time. And we put it on our laptops and did the first, interaction on video, and everybody had tears in the eyes. So it was very difficult for the kids to move on. My youngest one at that time, she was very little. She was more attached to me and Monty, and she didn't feel as much, but my eldest one found it very hard to settle here because she missed grandparents a lot. And every time she'll see grandma, she'll cry even more. So it was a difficult thing for her. But yeah. Once they entered into kindy soon after we came here. So I think they started learning the culture, made friends, and then slowly progressed.
So the extended family being there was one of the key things for the children then, and I'm
Yes.
sure it was for you as well in
Yes,
terms of that.
definitely.
So if we look back at the life back in India at that time, and what you were used to and where you were living, what is the kind of the striking difference that you noted when you came from India to New Zealand?
Oh my God, there was heaps. To start, I didn't know how to cook, so that was a mission. Anybody who would move from India, like we've been supported by having cooks at home and gardeners and drivers. And all you do is you go to job in the morning, you come back, take care of kids, and you also have a maid to look after the kids to help you, you know. And then you come here. Okay, where do we start? We start vacuum, dusting, cleaning, mopping, cleaning the toilets. Oh my God. And even do the gardening yourself. So it was a mission. And my biggest challenge was cooking. So when we moved here, I told my husband, whatever I cook, you have to eat. Don't complain. You know, I don't know how to cook. But I think living with my Bobby for 1 month taught me a little bit of skills. I learned some from her. And then I used to, you know, in those days, you call your mom. The Google wasn't that good a friend at that time. So call your mom, okay, what do you do? And yeah, my husband must have eaten like, you know, raw kane or sometime. But yeah, I've learned to cook now. I would say I'm a good cook. So that was my biggest challenge. You know, like you're learning so much, you're learning the culture, you're learning to run a family on your own without any help, running a house, where living in a joint family back home, never had to bother off about any such thing. Didn't have to make a budget, didn't have to plan, you know, picking out, dropping off kids. Like there was so much planning. And on top of that, you have to make a career, you have to make a living. You know, it was very challenging. The life is entirely different. Like it says, striking, there's lots of striking differences.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you on the cooking bit, Anshu, because I was the same because I moved me probably within 1 year of my marriage to New Zealand, and the same thing. I didn't know how to cook. The struggle was real. I feel you.
It was, the struggle was real.
Yeah. And I note that point where you said, you're pretty much doing everything in the household as well as having to do everything outside the household, because now that extended family support isn't there. And I know you said that you wanted to, you were looking for a better life and a change. So in the initial days, not now, in the initial days, did you think that you've lost something? Oh my God, what did we do? Kind of a feeling. Did you have that?
Yes, I definitely did. When you look back and you look here, like you're like, why did I even decide to come here? Was it like a good move? Like, you know, even when you go back for holidays and you come back, you have the same thought again in your mind. Do I really want to be here? But yeah, I think the move is for the betterment of kids. I think New Zealand is a great place to raise kids. It's such a safe place that I cannot appreciate it enough. And we feel that we are blessed to be in a country like this. So yes, it was hard at the time, but I think that hard work and that, you know, perseverance has paid off.
Yeah, and I note your point about the safe place, because I know you mentioned you have 3 girls and I have 1 girl as well. So going to India and then coming back here, yeah, and keeping up with the news, it scares you
It's
sometimes
scary.
about the safety of women sometimes over there in some parts. And I totally take your point about the safe place, but yeah, that feeling, I think, often comes back when you go on a holiday, like you said, and come back to realize in terms of, what is there. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the challenges. I know you said the cooking bit and the household work. Let's talk a little bit in terms of the challenges around work, in terms of settling in, getting a work, because you were in a very good position back in India there. And how that worked out for you and for your family, I guess.
It was very tough to get a job. I have a master's degree. I am an MBA from Institute in India, and which is why I was working in a bank as a marketing and sales manager, and you know that all relationship management with the big clients. When I came here, I thought that would help to get a job in the bank. Like, because I had that experience, but I was never even called for a single interview. And I tried heaps, which is why we got our businesses to start with then, because we didn't see that that was going anywhere. So we started with two businesses at the time, and we lost them in earthquakes. So that was a big hit on us. We had just started a career, just like 2007, we came, we started our businesses. 2010 earthquake, everything got shattered. Then to feed the family, I think then we had my little one at that time in 2010 as well, so I couldn't work. But my husband found a job somewhere outside. He started working, and then he had some challenges at work because he met with an accident at work. And I still was with a little child, and he was on bed rest for almost 8 months. He hit himself really bad, so we were on ACT for a time. And it was very tough time. So I was so desperate that I started my first job in a restaurant. And like the only job I could get, like it was like a little bit of managing, a little bit of picking dishes, taking orders and things like that. And I tell you, my mother-in-law cried when she knew that this is what I was doing from where I had come from. And she, like they said, come back, but we didn't want to give up. And then I, from there, I went to, because I had just made my entry into the customer service, and I've learned in New Zealand to get somewhere, however bright you are, wherever you come from, you have to start from down below. You have to climb the ladder from zero up high. So because I had made my little entry into the customer service, then I went into work as a supervisor at at Pack n Save. And then after doing some kind of leadership role there and some customer service, then I got into the job that I'm in now, and I'm happy with that. However, there's another thing that I learned in this journey of my applying for jobs and getting rejected is when I used my full name, nobody would call me because they would probably immediately recognize that this is an Indian surname or Indian name. However, when I used a nickname, you know why people say, why do you guys change a name when you go? Even though Anshu is my nickname, which I use now, but you know, when I changed my CV from my full name to Anshu, I started getting calls. So I'm like, this is not done. Like you're rejecting me based on my name. You haven't even met me. So that is one thing that I can never forget. And it was you know, a surprise that came through. That they do not accept you based on your qualifications. They do not accept you based on your past experience in India. Nothing is counted. You have to start from scratch, whatever. So that is very difficult. And if you're not strong, if you're not motivated enough, it will shatter your confidence. And it did take me a long time to get into the job I really wanted to get into. And I was so pleased when I finally got into it. That's something that I can relate to, something I feel I'm able to do, like it's based on my capabilities. So I'm glad. But yeah, don't lose hope. It's a long journey. It's a tough journey, I would say. But you get there eventually.
And there are so many things that you've touched on, Anshu, here. There's so many things. Like, I don't even know where to start for, like, to ask you more questions about. I take your point about the non-recognition of the work we have done back in our home countries, you know, and then starting at rock bottom here, and the challenges around you getting to start somewhere. Because I recollect from my own experience as well, I had to do the same thing, because because I came about the same time as you did. It was because I was a manager of operations in a multinational bank, and I thought I was doing pretty good to come here and get a job. And the same thing happened with me. I wouldn't hear back. And I wouldn't hear back. I remember I applied for about 300 jobs and nobody would reply. And then I had to start as a receptionist. So it takes, I think it takes, and I'd cry. You know, you just feel worthless, don't you? Yeah. And so that resilience bit, I think, is critical, isn't it?
It is very critical.
So overcoming the challenges, and you know, now that you've settled in and you've got your dream job, how do you describe New Zealand and the life of New Zealand to anyone?
Before I get like on the current life in New Zealand, I think I'll also add in the previous bit that be open to learning, be open to improving. Yes, we come with a thing that, oh, I am MBA. I've done this. I've done this. But yes, it doesn't work here. So yes, your confidence goes to zero. But in saying that, there are lots of cultural differences. There's lots of different ways to work here. The people, the mode of study here is entirely different to how we study. It's more practical. So the people who we are competing with have probably a different kind of practical experience or life experience than we have. So what I have learned in this journey is be open to learning and don't think that you're already full and there's, you know, everything. It doesn't work like that. It's only when you keep your options open that you will be able to get somewhere. That's very important. So current life in New Zealand, I would say it's good. I'm happy. I have through my work as well as my volunteer work that I do through Indian Social Cultural Club. I have made lots of social connections. I have made lots of new friends. And I find that I belong here by doing the things that I do for Indian Social Cultural Club because we organize lots of Indian events, festivals, and it has helped me to stay connected with my culture and also, you know, bring it to my own kids in a way that I wouldn't have been able to otherwise. My kids have experienced dancing on the stage. They experience so many religious rituals through the temples and stuff, and which by organizing through ISCC, I think they get their first-hand exposure to it. So I feel, you know, being part of such organizations and doing some volunteer work, being connected in the society helps. And then it doesn't make you feel that you are away from home because you are, you know, connected with so many people in a way that you feel it is home here. You make such friends and you know, extended families.
You touched on a very important point here around volunteer work. So I think there is a little bit more to explore here around how volunteer work can help any new migrants who come and why. Because, we do not come from a mindset back at home to do volunteer work, right? So yeah, I think it'll be good to just explore a little bit more. And can you, I know you said you made social connections through it, but how did you get involved with this whole idea of getting into volunteer work and then supporting the Indian Social Cultural Club? So a little bit more about that would be really good.
So when my kids were little, we used to see, you know, Diwali happening, and I was very excited. Even back home, like when I was in college, I used to participate in, you know, programs like that. So I was very keen. Okay, my kids could do something like that, you know, away from home, and I wanted them to connect with other Indians, other Indian kids of their age, so that, you know, yes, I had family, but I wanted more for them. So I decided to put them into some dances so they could perform at Diwali festivals, and that's how I got entry into, you know, knowing many more people who were involved with such activities. And because my kids were taking part in things like that, so they asked me if I would want to volunteer. And initially I was like, I don't think so I can do this. Like, how will I do it with work and this and little kids? But then, you know, I think it's been more than 5, 6 years that I've been doing it. And it was just that, yes, you have to make a commitment. It takes a lot of time from your life. But when you see the end results and when you see you're making a difference in the community, it just motivates you even more. Like, if I can, you know, help one person through my work, I feel that I've done something. And that's this whole volunteer work helps me to achieve that. Like, recently, we did a session with the New Zealand police and social workers about domestic abuse. And we ran a live session on it. And my only hope to do that was, even if one person, one lady, one man can get benefited or learn something out of this and, help themselves by getting the knowledge and the know-how, who to approach, how to approach, then, my purpose is saved. That one person will help somebody else. So doing this volunteer work, helping the community is the whole idea why I got drawn into this. And I think I have some time with my kids grown up now that I think I can put it toward the community. So if you have time and you're keen to do something good, then you should join such organizations. And if you're new here, and a lot of new immigrants, a lot of new kids from ARA, from university, come and join our group, because not just people of my age, but youngsters benefit in a way that they get experience. So a couple of people who joined us, they were just fresh grad out of the or out of ARA, and they wanted like a project on designing development, and they became part of our groups, and now they are good, like they have progressed in their careers because they have that experience from us by just working as a volunteer. So you get those kind of things, and then you get stage management, event management, security, all of those different niche areas that you get experience in. And kids have used that in their biodatas, in their CVs to then say that, okay, I have the experience and this is my qualification, and that adds to their job profile. So it helps in many ways.
No, I think you've touched, like you mentioned, how it adds to their experience. Because reflecting back on the whole conversation, I think with organizations such as the Indian Social Cultural Club, who do wonderful activities, they are providing a platform for these new entrants in the country, which we didn't have,
Yes.
probably,
Yeah.
because then it gives them an opportunity to get that experience and then go on to further jobs, which is beautiful, because those are the kind of things we need in to support our communities, isn't it? And
Definitely.
I did have another question around how you overcame the mindset that we have around why should I volunteer? We just feel like it's a waste of a time. Sometimes people think that, oh, we're better off earning more money than doing this volunteer work.
Yeah.
How did
My
you
kids
overcome
ask
that?
me. My kids ask me that question. Why do you do that? You do it like a job, mom. You don't even get paid. I'm like, well, some jobs are not for money, they are for your soul. So I think volunteer work is something like that. It feeds your soul. It's more than, just money. So as I said, if like I started, and initially I was just doing performers. From just doing performers management, and the happiness, the brightness that comes on those kids' faces when you give them a stage to dance, the talent that they have to display, and there's no other way to give them that stage. So that happiness that we provide, that get, I would say, is on their faces, transpires inside me because I have been able to give them that happiness. So it helps me being happy. So I think from there, from just doing the performances, now I'm doing a lot of management side of things, a lot of organization funding. I've taken on a bigger role in the organization. And again, as I said, if you are sitting at a level where you can help somebody in some way, then I think we should. And that's my only reason to be doing the volunteer work. Like, if I can make a difference in one way or the other, I'll be happy to.
And I think that's a mindset shift that needs to happen when we do come along into New Zealand. Because the other thing that you also mentioned was about the connections you were creating for your kids
Yes.
through this work, because that was the motivation where you started this, isn't it?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
So
Yeah.
how important was that for you to, hold on to that cultural identity that you have as an Indian, around your traditions and your customs and your faiths?
It is very important and still is. I'm an Indian at heart and it will always be until I die. And I want my kids to be like that as well. I think when they meet other Indian kids, other Indian families, they learn from them. They see our Indian culture, how we eat, how we talk, how we what our beliefs are. And, those beliefs have to be grounded in them. It's not easy for us, being Indian parents, raising our kids in New Zealand, to ground those beliefs and values in our kids, because they are surrounded by other kids with different values, different beliefs. So for them to see like-minded people, I think it helps. And for them to participate in Indian events and things, it was my way to bring them close to other Indian families, other Indian kids, and share beliefs. And so they learn from each other. They find friends. They understand Indian culture more than just being in the house and going to other people's houses. And I'll tell you something very different, that when we are here, we're not just interacting with a North Indian. We're interacting with a South Indian. We're interacting with an East Indian, West Indian, like the whole of India, not just one state. And that is such a sweet thing that we get to experience, because a South Indian eats differently to what a North Indian eats. And my kids would have never experienced that if they were back home. Now they are here. We have friends who are Gujaratis. We have friends who are South Indians. We have friends who are Bengalis. They experience so many different cultures around them. And it is so good. And that is what I mean. When you make social connections, your kids get so much awareness and they learn so much from each other. So I think it benefits a lot.
And you've touched on that very important point, which is a good reflection, Anshu, on the fact that if we were back in India, we would still remain in, our cities or our states and never get to experience the other cultures across the country, because India is a very big country, isn't it?
Yeah, it's huge. Like, I don't think so I've ever been to Gujarat, but here I attend that Garba night every season, and I think I did first time I did Garba in New Zealand. I've never done back home, so it's great.
Oh, nice. Because what it's telling me is that, even though we are out of our home country, which is a very big country, the different parts where we come from and what you've created here is, or what the Indian community is creating here, is what's cultural richness, even for the Indian diaspora through
Yeah.
that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that, I guess then my question is, so, you talked about your children a little bit. And how do they see themselves then? Do they see themselves as Kiwis, or do they see themselves as Indian Kiwis, or just Kiwis?
Each to their own. Hamza, I have three kids, so they're all very different. Yes, they are very deeply rooted Indians in their hearts. I think they see themselves as Indian Kiwis. I wouldn't say they see themselves as Indians or Kiwis, but yeah, they have a good mix of both. And I think it is good to be like that, because they need to work around a society which is not based on Indian culture. It is a different society. So it is good that they get the best of both worlds and they acknowledge the differences and move on, understand what their values are, and then move on in the society, so they can face what's coming up in their, ways, and can face the challenges of being in a Kiwi society, being an Indian. But I think they feel they're at home here.
Oh, so that is a very interesting point about home.
Yeah.
So let's delve a little bit more on the idea of home. And I really want to go back. And I know you said you had social connections built through the networks that you associated with, and that was probably mostly within the Indian diaspora. But outside of the Indian diaspora, how easy was it to build those connections? Or was it, did it take a little bit more effort?
I think it has been fine to make those connections outside of Indian diaspora as well, but it has been mostly through work or mums of, kids at school and things like that. So it has not been very hard. I've also realized that, Hafsa, that as we are keen to mingle into this society also wants to learn our ways, because New Zealand is a very multicultural place. And now we see more, like 17 years ago, there was not so many Indians as they are now. So the Kiwis also have to learn our ways so they can appreciate the diversity between the two cultures, because we are living together. So I think, it works for both the cultures if we are open to each other. And I have seen people keen to know about how do I do things? What do I make at home? How do I cook? What festivals we celebrate? What do we do? Why are our marriages 7 days long? Like, what do we even do in comparison to a white wedding? So what I'm trying to say is they are as inquisitive to learn about us as we are to learn about them, and to be able to fit in, as they say. It works mutually for both of us. So I don't think so it has been a problem. You just, as I said before, you need to be open.
Yeah, no, you did say, right up at the beginning when you moved here as well. I think it is your mindset as well, aren't you? That you came here with a with an open mindset, which was keen to learn and also very resilient one as well, through to go through those challenges and, survive and thrive is what I am noticing in this conversation. So let's talk a little bit about the idea. So in terms of connections, you've got those social connections and built those external connections with even the non-Indian diaspora. So and the fact that you highlight that everyone's keen to learn around what that is. How do you think this is being around? Because obviously what you would do in India would be very different to what you do here, like the 7 days of wedding. Let's take that as an example. How has that adapted to the New Zealand way of living, the 7 days of the wedding? How did has there been any change?
No, we are still the same. We still do the same thing in the same way. Yes, certain things would have changed. Like, you sleep early, you don't eat at 11 in the night like you would do at home. You start cooking at 9, and So yes, we have adapted to the lifestyle. It was shock when, lights were closed off your neighbor, shut off, I mean, off your neighbor at 9, and then it was super quiet on the roads and there's nobody. The shops close at 6. I'm like, why, where are the people? It is a shocking thing. But yeah, now we have learned to adapt to the society and to live the way. You live, what do they say? If you're in Rome, live, do what the Romans do. So if you're in a country and you want to enjoy the benefits of that country, then you need to learn to live with their ways. I think that's the best way, while not losing your Indianness.
Yes, because that is very key, isn't it? Because otherwise
Yeah.
you will struggle with an identity crisis that will be hard. And I agree with your point about the dinner. My kids refuse to have dinner before 8 o'clock, even though they've been born and brought up in New Zealand. It's just that, no, we can't eat so early, Mum.
Well, I have changed. I have dinner at 6:37 most
Oh,
days,
wow.
but that's what I'm saying. Like, I've adapted it. That's a good thing actually for your health, so I've adapted good things.
No, I haven't adopted good things then. Because then that tells you a little bit about in terms of the impact on your future generations. So let's say we've adapted this, and then you could, because you've got 3 kids and their future generations are probably going to grow up here. Do you think they might lose some of those elements which are like the true essence of the Indian culture?
It's very funny that you're saying that. I was thinking just like a couple of days ago, what if my, when we talk to some people and they say, oh, I have some Indian descent, my grandfather, or like, I don't want to be known like that. I have to ensure that my kids marry Indians and that Indian descent remains like that. I was just thinking about it just like a couple of days ago in my head. I don't know why. But I would like to have like my kids to have that Indianness and my future generations to have that Indianness in them, and it continues that way. I hope I'll try to push my kids to marry Indians, but let's see.
Yeah, that is a very interesting topic. We are not going to delve into that.
That'll be a different tangent altogether.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a very different tangent. So now I would like to ask you, now having had this lovely conversation, I think there are a few questions that I have towards the as we've reached the conclusion is number one is how would you tell a new immigrant who's come to New Zealand about what New Zealand is? Or what would you tell them?
Right. That's a good question. I cannot put it in like few lines, but I'd like to say a few things. So New Zealand's a very beautiful country to start with. And the people here are really nice and open. They're very helpful. You'll only see people smiling here in the South Island specifically, in the shops when you go, and they'll wish you, like, which doesn't happen anywhere. And they will not feel offended if they're walking on the street and you say hello to them. So we live amongst very beautiful community. People love their gardens. They love doing gardening, which I suck at. But yeah, that's another thing. Like beautiful fauna, flora, you know, they love their pets. And they're very, very, you know, attached to their pets. So we don't ever say anything about it. The other very important thing is the people here, like New Zealand is known as to be one of the least corrupt countries. So I would say the people here are value high integrity and moral values. And if you work with that integrity, with good work ethics, and show that you are sincere and hardworking, you will do well here. People appreciate such work ethic. And people do appreciate Indians because they're hardworking and sincere. And most of us, I think, come with some form of degree when we come to New Zealand. So we are well educated as well. I would say use your knowledge. If you need to even upgrade it, upskill, do not feel shy to do it. Do that, and then you will ask for help. That's another very important thing. Ask for help. Use those social connections, as I said. Meet the societies that are around here. They will guide you who you can approach in the time of need. There are lots of community services like which help you with making a good biodata, CVs. You know, they can guide you as to what you need as skills. There's some small courses to upskill yourself. So look at all those things. Little things help a lot. But I would say if you've made a decision to come to New Zealand, it's a beautiful country. It will adopt you like its own, as long as you value it in the same way.
Beautiful. I think that's a perfect description of what life and people in New Zealand are like. So very nice. Thank you, Anshu. So I guess my last few questions here then. Is New Zealand home for you then?
It's definitely home for my kids. See, for me, my family is here, but my parents are still back home. My roots are still back home. So if I'm talking about home, I'm always talking about India. When we say we're going back home for a holiday, you know, we don't say we go to India for a holiday. We're saying we're going back home to a holiday. So for me, India is still home. I'd still want to go back and live there after I retire. That's my plan. But let's see if
Oh,
that happens.
and that is beautiful because you again touched on the point that roots are there in back in India, and that is where the heart is, kind of. Yeah, you mentioned about an important thing here, which I guess doesn't apply to a lot of young migrants, but might apply to migrants who spent a bit of time here, who are split between having mom and dad back in the home country. So I'm one of them. And you talked about that. So I just want to ask a couple more questions in there. How does that impact life?
I think that is the hardest part, to have your parents, older parents, older generation. You are separated. India is very far from here. You have to, travel for 24 to 36 hours before you can reach home. So that anxiousness is always there, that you need to be there with them at their time of need. And that is the only thing that ever scares me in life, is what if I'm not there with my parents when they need me? Yes, I can fly, but that is one thing that always concerns me. It is difficult, and it is always at the back of my mind. That is one thing that, as I said, always scares me. I'll tell you a thing. Like, when it was COVID time, in 2020, I was to go back home, and because of COVID, my flights got canceled, and it had already been 3 years. I'd not seen my parents, not seen my family. Last I'd gone in 2017, so I was like very anxious that I couldn't go. And COVID was like, a time when, there were so many deaths happening back home. There was so much going on with oxygen cylinders, whatnot, and all the wrong kind of medications. And so it was a super scary time. And you didn't want to be far from your loved ones. You didn't know how long this, closure would exist, or like how long the countries are going to be closed and you can't travel, and all those kind of things. We didn't know how long it was going to last. And then when they opened the borders for traveling and then quarantining, I said I want to go, and I did go. And I think that was not a mistake I ever made. I quarantined. I stayed in 15 days back home, 15 days in quarantine in a hotel in Auckland, and I have never regretted that. I think my emotional, what do you say, bucket was empty at that time. And I needed to see them even for 15 days to fill that up, to be able to live the next 4 years before I go back. So that emptiness is always there, because your parents are not here. Your loved ones are too far away. So it is difficult. It is one thing that I don't enjoy.
No, neither do I. I agree with you, that emptiness that nobody can fill up, because there is that, it does take a lot of time to go back home if you book a flight as well. I agree with that. And it does create that, and you put it beautifully by saying the emotional bucket gets empty, because we all need our parents at different times in our life.
That hugs, mom's hugs are important. You had to travel 36 hours for a hug. So, it is hard.
Just the, not just the hugs I feel, sometimes even just being the things that we didn't like as teenagers, we really want those now, isn't it? Being told off on small things and being told and having those conversations, they mean very different things now with age, isn't it? Oh, it was beautiful talking to you, Anshu. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes.
So thank you very much for sharing this journey with me. And yeah, I look forward to reconnecting with you in a different space.
Sure, anytime.
Thanks for joining us on In Transit. If today's story moved you, taught you something new, or simply made you feel seen, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone else. Also, don't forget to tune in to Plains Media for the next episode. Until next time, remember, your story matters.